You're listening to Vatican Radio, a report cataloguing widespread torture, murder and mass starvation in North Korea is under discussion at the United Nations Human Rights Council this week. The report, issued by a UN Commission of Inquiry on Human Rights in the country, officially called the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, is based on testimony from several hundred survivors who managed to escape from prison camps in the isolated nation. The government in Pyongyang has rejected the findings of the report, which will also be referred to the International Criminal Court for possible prosecution of North Korean leaders on charges of crimes against humanity.
I mean, the issue of North Korea in the UN Commission of Inquiry's report has been compared, in terms of the human rights abuses, to Auschwitz and the Nazi period.
Ben Rogers is in charge of the East Asian region for Christian Solidarity Worldwide, a UK-based group campaigning for religious freedom and human rights across the globe. He visited North Korea in 2010, but he told me the situation in the country has deteriorated significantly since then, under the leadership of the young Kim Jong-un.
Yes, absolutely. I think all the indicators are that it's actually worsening. The execution of his uncle just in December, Jang Son-taek, was a very worrying sign that, you know, if he can execute his own uncle, you can imagine what he's doing to ordinary people. There's also evidence of a real tightening up on the border, stopping North Koreans escaping from the country into China. And China also has tightened up its position in sending back people to North Korea to a pretty dire fate. So, yes, it's certainly not getting any better.
And yet people do continue to escape miraculously, don't they?
They do, in much smaller numbers than they used to. But, yes, people do find ways to get across the border, and that's a sign of their desperation.
The United Nations is currently presenting a report on the situation in North Korea to the UN Human Rights Council. What effect do you think it will have?
Well, it is by far the most significant report that there has been. We campaigned for about 6 years for the establishment of a United Nations Commission of Inquiry. And for a long time, we were voices crying in the wilderness and with no one listening. But there came a turning point, and in March last year, the Human Rights Council established this inquiry. It was actually established by consensus. It was unanimous. And the inquiry was chaired by an Australian judge, Michael Kirby, and they held a whole range of public hearings in Seoul and Tokyo and Washington, Geneva, London, where I think literally hundreds of North Korean survivors of the prison camps who've now escaped from North Korea gave their testimony, gave evidence. The report that was published was one of the most strongly worded and clearest UN reports that I've ever seen. It didn't hide the truth at all. It really shone a light on the horrific situation in North Korea. And particularly, it concluded that what is happening in North Korea amounts to crimes against humanity, and called on the United Nations to refer a case to the International Criminal Court or some other justice mechanism if the International Criminal Court isn't possible.
Is this going to happen, do you think?
Well, it's very good that it's been recommended by a UN body. There is a resolution before the Human Rights Council which calls for that recommendation to be implemented. Getting there is another matter, though. It has to go to the Security Council. Obviously, on the Security Council, China and Russia will need a huge amount of work to get them to not use their veto. There are some defeatists who would say, well, it's not even worth trying because China will veto it. I don't take that view. I think we need to push it as much as we can and see what happens at the Security Council. If there is a veto and it can't go to the International Criminal Court, then I think we need to look at other mechanisms that can be used for accountability. There certainly seems to be a will on the part of the European Union, the United Kingdom particularly. They have said, we're not going to let this report sit on a shelf. We will take it forward. So that will seems to be there, and we need to do what we can to encourage it.
As you say, for many years you've been campaigning on this issue, and yet it didn't seem to be crossing the public radar or indeed going anywhere up the political agenda. And then you talk about a turning point. Why was that, do you think?
I think one of the key factors, two key factors. One was that there has been a growing number of North Korean testimony becoming more public. Shin Dong-yuk, who was born in a North Korean prison camp, there was a book published about him called Escape from Camp 14, and I think that was very significant. Other defector testimonies that have been heard in various places internationally have raised the profile. But secondly, in 2011, I was involved, along with a number of other organisations, in establishing a coalition of NGOs with a very long-winded name, almost worthy of the UN itself, the International Coalition to Stop Crimes Against Humanity in North Korea, or ICNK. And that coalition brought together 40 organisations from across Europe, North America, Asia, Latin America, specifically calling for this inquiry. And I think when the United Nations and member states saw a body of 40 influential NGOs, including the three largest in the world, Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch, and the Paris-based International Federation of Human Rights, calling for this with one voice, I think that had a significant impact. We also had grassroots campaigns of just members of the public writing to their members of parliament. And I think as public opinion was beginning to grow, still nowhere near the level we'd like it to be, but as it began to grow and awareness began to grow, that had an impact.
Pope Francis is, of course, travelling to South Korea in the summer. Do you think that during his visit, this issue of relations with the North and the situation inside North Korea is likely to be under the spotlight then?
I very much hope so. And I would be surprised if it isn't, given the issues that are close to Pope Francis's heart. I would be surprised if he didn't make some reference to questions of peace and questions of justice. And whilst I appreciate that popes would want to be careful about straying into sort of deep politics, I hope that he will speak out about the suffering of the people of North Korea, including the intense persecution of Christians in North Korea, and that he will shine a spotlight on those issues.
There are many groups, aren't there, working quietly behind the scenes, trying to support Christians who, as you say, face a very difficult situation there.
Yes, absolutely. There are a number of groups speaking out about the issue. There are groups working with refugees in China, many of whom are Christians. But there is a need, I think, to take the... I mean, the issue of North Korea in the UN Commission of Inquiry's report has been compared, in terms of the human rights abuses, to Auschwitz and the Nazi period. Justice Michael Kirby used exactly those words. Michael Kirby and others have said, you know, there was rightly an international outcry against apartheid and a mass global public movement. Why is there no public movement on North Korea? We would like to see a groundswell of public opinion of the kind that we saw over apartheid. And that, if we have that, I think we will one day see some change.
North Korea is, though, the most isolated country in the world. Do you really think this kind of pressure from Western countries could have an effect on the situation, on the government?
I think pressure alone, no. But I think a combination of... Because it's the most isolated country in the world, I think we need to use every tool available to us. And that's why I advocate, of course, pressure, also accountability through some kind of referral to the International Criminal Court or other mechanism. But I'm also an advocate of what I might call critical engagement. The objective is not to isolate North Korea further. The objective, obviously, is to try to open it up. And therefore, I do think efforts to engage with North Korea, to raise these issues face-to-face, in the same way that was done with the Soviet Union through the Helsinki process, but also breaking the information blockade through cultural exchanges, and most particularly through radio broadcasts into North Korea. We've been campaigning for the BBC World Service to establish a Korean language service. I've seen how effective BBC Burmese was in Burma, and I think if BBC World Service could broadcast to the Korean Peninsula, north and south, that would be a significant contribution. So those range of tools need to be used.
And the role of the church in South Korea, it's a very vibrant, growing church. Do you think it can have any impact on trying to build relations with the North?
Certainly it can. I mean, I think first and foremost through prayer, and I hope that all people listening to this will pray for North Korea on a regular basis. As to other ways, yes, I think the church can play a significant role. Of course, the church in North Korea is... in Pyongyang, there are four visible churches, two Protestant, one Catholic, and one Russian Orthodox. The Catholic Church has no priest, and all four churches are essentially Potemkin-style show churches. So How the church in the South engages with the North is a difficult question. There are Catholics and other Christians who do go into North Korea and are involved in humanitarian activities, and I think that's something that could be encouraged. But the simple answer to your question is yes, it can and should play a key role.
Thanks there to Ben Rogers, in charge of the East Asian region for Christian Solidarity Worldwide.